If I'm an expert at something, if I'm growing something, and I'm a beginner in something, if I always have my hand in one of those things, there's never a problem. I don't need the beginner thing to make me money. Growing is kind of exciting. Expert is keeping me really safe. The problem is there's been times where I was just the expert, and that was the boringest, loneliest time for me. Because when you're not doing well, you could always say, well, when I get there, things will be better. But the worst is when you get there and you're where you think you should be and you're empty. And you go, wait a second, I have the money, I have the success, I have the accolades. Why do I feel so empty? It's because you're just the expert. You're not using your expertise to teach other people. You're not curious enough to challenge yourself to do something that you can fail at. You're just trying to hold on.
Hey, welcome to episode 321, that is 321, otherwise known as the area code for Cape Canaveral, Florida, of the Beginner Photography Podcast, brought to you by CloudSpot, the easiest way to deliver and sell your photos online. I'm your host and wedding photographer, Raymond Hatfield, and today we are chatting with photojournalist, sports photographer, Vinny Puglisi, about the wealth of connection as an artist. Now, this is Vinny's third time on the podcast. I originally heard Vinny on the Solopreneur Hour with Michael O'Neill probably 5 years ago about. And he was talking about how he had gone from, you know, being a kid with no direction in life to shooting all of the largest sports events that would just make, you know, anybody envious, right? The Super Bowl, World Series, World Cup, the Stanley Cup, and more, right? So many sports, all the sports, right? So I reached out at the time to invite Vinny on the podcast to learn more about his crazy story. And here we are 5 years later, two books and one friendship later. He is back to talk about his new book, The Wealth of Connection. It is a pragmatic look into how Vinny has created a network of people that over the years have helped him to achieve his goals and dreams. So stick around, you know what, until after the interview where I might be giving away a copy or two of his new book. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's podcast interview with Vinny Puglisi. Vinny, you are a returned guest. If people really wanted to dive in to your history in photography, they could do so. But for those who are new to the podcast, can you kind of remind us how you got your start in photography? And if I remember, you were straight A student, perfect school counselors, and everything throughout life went perfect for you. That's how it went, right?
Oh, that's totally accurate. Everybody in school loved me. All my teachers said, yeah. No, I was the opposite. I found out on the day before graduation that I would even graduate.
Oh, that's really?
My claim to fame. Yeah. My two claims to fame to high school are that, that I found out the day before and I somehow managed to work my way into it. And I cut art class 89 out of 92 times in my senior year. But I was able to build a relationship with the teacher where I'd see her in the hallways and I'd tell her what I was working on. I would bring her some stuff and this and that. And I would show up for the three times I needed to be there. And I wound up passing art, cutting 89 out of 92 times. So that was my senior year. So when I left school and then I kind of, you know, hung around a little bit the next year and would see people. One guy got off a bus, we're hanging out. And he said, thanks a lot. I said, what? He goes, because of you, Roslyn High School now has an attendance policy.
Oh,
because they saw me, like, how could somebody that missed class 89 times pass a class? And then, so my lasting legacy on Roslyn High School is the attendance policy is because of me, because of how I work the system.
They should call it the Puglisi attendance policy.
That's right. That's right. So no, I school was not my thing. College wasn't my thing. I had five majors until I found photography. And my, you know, I won't go too deep into it because I think we might have even talked about it, but I just had a moment where, you know, I would take pictures here and there and I was really into sports. I had a point and shoot camera. And I love to travel. And my dad, like, I was just lost. I had been arrested. I was kind of a thief. I had all the bad qualities and bad character. At 21, I moved back with my parents. I had a part-time job. I had a couple of part-time jobs. I still worked hard. That's my one saving grace. I worked really hard. I had multiple jobs. But I had a nightmare. I woke up in the middle of the night that I had a nightmare that I got caught stealing from this job again. And I wasn't stealing from the job. Even worse, I would overcharge the customers. It was a drive-through convenience store. And it would be like 50 cents, a dollar. But I would make like $100 a night as like an 18-year-old, 19-year-old. I would literally like wouldn't even cash my paychecks because they weren't very much. But I was making $4 an hour. I was making way more this way. It's a terrible story, but it's, you know, you look back at, you know, bad choices make great stories.
Right.
But it led to this, which was me waking up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night saying, what am I doing with my life? Mm-hmm. It was like the first time that I had like character, like, what am I doing? And I went downstairs and it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. And my dad came downstairs to get a glass of water. And I'm sitting there like seriously contemplating life for the first time ever when everybody else does it years earlier. Right. And they're thinking about it. And I said, Dad, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. And he was so nonchalant. He didn't even look me in the face. He was getting water. His back was to me. And he said, well, you like taking pictures. You like sports. You like traveling. Why don't you become a photographer? Like that. But the good side was I had no expectations because I was so bad at everything that I had done that I wasn't leaving anything. Mm. Like if I was a good accountant, if I had a good job, like how am I going to start this thing? I'm going to give this up to do that. I had absolutely nothing to lose. So I went out the next day and I bought a point and shoot camera, not a point. I bought an SLR. Mm. It wasn't even autofocus at that time. And I just started going to baseball games. I started going to Shea Stadium, to Yankee Stadium, buying the cheapest ticket possible. And all of a sudden I had an interest and I had a passion. And 5 nights a week, I'd figure out the patterns of the security guards. I would find my way past them by the second inning and I would be in the front row behind the photo well where the photographers were. And every single night, my new school was going there and asking the photographers questions in between innings. What kind of camera do you use? What kind of film? Who do you work for? How'd you get your job? I did this 4 to 5 nights a week. Mm-hmm. I wasn't getting paid. It was costing me money. But I made so many connections in there. Paul Bearswell from Newsday, all these different Associated Press, Sports Illustrated. I met all these people by being and so for 2 years I did it like that. I would travel around. I would just build up a portfolio, which led to my first internship, which was for Bruce Bennett Studios, which were the team photographers for the Islanders, Rangers, Devils, and Flyers in the National Hockey League. And so my first gig was free. I was an intern, so they called me the Vintern. And then I finally got upgraded to minimum wage. I'm like, okay, I can get rid of that nickname. And Joe Luzito, my coworker, goes, okay, you're not the Vintern. He goes, now you're minimum wage. Instead of minimum. And I'm like, I'll never escape it.
Yeah.
And then you know, within 4 or 5 months of just doing researching and filing and doing all the clerical work that I just to get my foot in the door, I got assigned to my first hockey game. It was Rangers versus Penguins at Madison Square Garden, Mario Lemieux versus Mark Messier. And I'm shooting that like, this is my dream job. And so that's essentially how it really got started.
Now, I know that at some point you were working at a camera shop, you were developing film, you were printing your own photos. Was this before or was this after that?
This was during that time. Oh, so okay. I worked, my three jobs were the convenience store, a photo lab where we printed film, and then I was a waiter at the Spare Rib in the evenings.
Yeah.
So those were the three things I did. And in between that, I shot.
So in your book, let's talk about that for a second, right? You just came out with a new book. First of all, your first book, I've talked about it many times. It's a fantastic book. Your new book, The Wealth of Connection, I said this in the review that I left on Amazon. It really feels refreshing because we do live in this world of, you know, everything's got to be optimized. Everything's got to have a strategy behind it. And sometimes it's just nice to take a step back and think like, oh, well, maybe there should be a human connection or a human element in this business that we're trying to put together. And I think photography is definitely one of those worlds where obviously it can be a business, but also at its core, it's very much a human art form because we're just trying to tell a story with whatever photo that we're, you know, sharing or that we're shooting. And we want people to feel something based on that photo. So I feel like the two of these go together very well. And obviously you being a photographer and writing this book, I can't think of a better pairing than that. But I want to talk about something that you talked about in the book, which I think ties perfectly into this, specifically about shooting hockey games, building a portfolio. And today, so this was in the 80s, correct?
No, this is mid-90s.
Okay, mid-90s.
Not that old.
Yeah.
I'm old, but not that old.
I apologize. So obviously, you're shooting on film. You're working in a photo lab. You're trying to print your photos to build a portfolio. And today we live in a very different time in terms of how photography comes together, right? Most of it is online. If you want to get in front of somebody, you have an ability to do so with the internet, but that wasn't an option back then. So today we're often offered for new photographers this chance of being compensated in exposure, right? Mm-hmm. And I think for any new photographer, the idea of getting any sort of compensation that isn't monetary is a very difficult pill to swallow. But you talk about psychic compensation, yes, in the book. Can you tell me a little bit about where this idea came from? Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
Yeah, so I'm working with the photo, it's prestige photo. And so I'm in that mode of a lot of beginning photographers, but I don't have the internet to go to. It's 1995. So where do you go? You literally go to a magazine and you look under the credits. That's how you find out who the photographers are. You look at the newspaper, you look at the magazines, you get trade magazines, but I have no connections. I have no, nothing to, it was very, very frustrating. Like today it's good and bad. You can go into, you know, your group, right? And you can meet people and you can connect, but there's almost overwhelm, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a lot of comparison. The only comparison I had was with the pros of the pros who were making, because you could see their work published. You couldn't see all the amateurs that are trying. You don't see their work. So you feel kind of alone. Like I'm the only one that's awful and everybody else is good, right? That's how it feels. So I have to really get into it. So I'm printing these, I'm working in this photo lab. I'm trying to build a portfolio and I'm getting frustrated because I'm like, this is what I really want to do. This is, you know, about a year after that conversation with my dad, and I'm going to the games and I'm had the negatives, and a guy comes in, his name's Fred Klein, and he's an attorney in town. I went to high school with his son, and he was a very curious guy. He was very successful, but he took interest in what I was doing. What are you working on? I'm like, tell him what I'm trying to do. And I'm like, I have no way, I don't even know how to get into this. And he said to me, okay, he goes, I like your demeanor. I like your personality. I like your work ethic. He goes, I'll tell you what. He goes, I'm friends with a guy. His name's Shelly Finkel. He's the manager for Mike. And I'm like, I know who Shelly Finkel is. Other people listening might not. He's still in it. He was the manager for Mike Tyson. And Mike Tyson at that point was the old baddest man on the planet. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to be kidding me. Is this the big break, right? So he goes, here's what you do. Put together a portfolio. I will take it to Shelly and I will see what we can do. Well, he connected me to Shelly. I actually got on the phone with Shelly Finkel, had a conversation with him. It turned out that he went to the same high school as my dad 2 years earlier.
Perfect.
So we formed a bond through conversation, through connection. And he said, all right. He goes, yeah, I'll do this. He goes, put the portfolio together. I'll bring it to Sports Illustrated and I'll see what they can do. So Sports Illustrated now is not what it was in the 90s. Mm-hmm. In the 90s, it was the place for, I mean, it was the top for sports photographers, hands down. You get anything at Sports Illustrated, life is going to change, right?
Yeah.
Then I'm a beginner. I'm a nobody. So I'm like, oh my God. So I don't even have a portfolio. I print out a portfolio and I give it to him and I'm all nervous for 2 weeks. And Fred came in one time, then he came in again and he's holding my portfolio. And he goes, hey, you know, we tried. He goes, we brought it in there. Actually brought it into New York City. My portfolio was in Sports Illustrated. And they said, you know, you showed promise, but you're a beginner. You know, you're a beginner and there's nothing they can really do. And I was kind of crushed because I kind of had short-term like excitement. And so he left and he came in a couple more times and then he came in maybe about a couple weeks later and I was just all down, not sure what was going on. And as he was leaving, I said, I am such a loser for doing this. All my friends in high school have jobs, careers, and I'm sitting here with these three dead end jobs with this dream and I don't know where I'm going. Like, I'm just a loser. And as he's walking out the door, he opens the door, he looks back at me and he says, you are not a loser. You're doing everything you need to do to become successful. And then he says, but if you're still here in 5 years, you're a loser. And he left. And I stared at the door and I said, oh my goodness. I'm like, and I quit the job 2 weeks later mm-hmm. because I said, there's no way he's coming back and he's going to find me here in 5 years, let alone 5 months. I'm going to go do this. I've got nothing to lose. I've got to make this happen. So I bought a plane ticket for Chicago, and I flew to Chicago, and I drove for 2 weeks staying in youth hostels for $10 a night to go to different stadiums, to meet different people, to learn about this industry, to meet people in different markets, different stadiums, and wound up, and I didn't write this in the book, wound up at Lambeau Field the last night of the trip. This is Brett Favre's, those that are sports fans, it's Brett Favre's first MVP season. It's a preseason game. I won't give you the full story, but I wound up getting a ticket to the game for $20 last minute because it was sold out. It's a preseason game. And I snuck down to the front row like I did in New York for over a year. And as I'm taking pictures of the pregame, you know, warmups, a guy walks up to me from the side and he's on the field. And he said, "Hey, are you taking pictures tonight?" And I said, "Yeah, I got my camera. I'm taking pictures from the crowd." He goes, "Can you help me out?" I said, "What do you need?" He said, "My assistant didn't show up tonight. I work for NFL Films. His name's Jim Jordan." And I said, "That's like my dream job ever." So he goes, "If you, you know, can you help me out?" I said, "Of course I can help you out." So he opens the gate. It's like this yellow golden, it's like literally a golden gate that's opened up for me. And I walk onto the field, my dream job. He puts a press pass around my neck. He said, "All I need you to do is change my film once a quarter and you do whatever you want." So now I got literally walk right into my dream job. I'm shooting from the sidelines. I go into the huddle with the Packers because I'm like, I'm not missing out on anything. Brett Favre looks at me. I have a baseball cap on backwards. I look like a schlub because I wasn't prepared to be like media.
Sure.
I was just going to a game. And he looks at me and he kind of winked and he gave me this look like, "You don't belong here." And he smiled at me and I smiled and I got, I still have that picture of him just kind of grinning at me. Yeah. Like just, and I'm in the huddle. So first quarter, pro football moves much faster than high school football, which is the only thing that I'd shot. And I thought it was a running play. It was actually a passing play. I'm looking around confused. And I look to my right and I see a number 8 and a number 2 right in my face. It's Michael Westbrook from the Redskins running right towards me, just caught a pass. I could not get out of the way. And he barreled me over, flipped me over.
Oh, really?
Wow. My gear went flying. Yeah. I took my first NFL hit, face down in the grass, and came up literally pulling dirt off my face. And so later in the game, I'm underneath the goalpost. This moment really changed my life. I'm underneath the goalpost and I look to my left and I see Jim and he's in the corner of the end zone. And he's waving me over and I'm like, "What's going on?" So I run over and he goes, "Kneel down here." And I said, okay. And within just a few minutes, Brett Favre rolls out and he throws a pass to Dorsey Levens, catches a pass right in front of me. Best picture I've ever taken, the celebration. And as he goes to walk away, he looks back and he kind of winks at me. And I say, so I run over to him. I said, "What just happened?" And he took his headset off and he goes, "I've got Brett Favre mic'd up for NFL Films. I knew where the play was going to go. I wanted to give you a good shot." So that was like the best picture I took. And I'll never forget standing underneath the goalpost, looking at the stadium, being like, "This is what I need to do for a living." Mm-hmm. So at the end of the game, I said to him, I said, "I'm going to go to the press conference." He goes, "You're NFL Films. You can do whatever you want tonight." So I go to the press conference and I'm shooting Mike Holmgren, the coach, speaking. And a guy comes up to me, looks like the principal from Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. He's the PR guy. And he goes, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "I'm the NFL. He snaps the pass off my neck. Says, "Wait right here. Like, I'm in trouble." And at this point, I'm thinking, I don't even need the press pass. I'm here. The confidence changed. I'm like, I belong here. Mm-hmm. And he comes back. He goes, "No, you're fine." I shoot the press conference. I go to leave. Literally back then, the locker room from the Packers led right to the parking lot, literally one wall separated. And I walk from this world into that world and I see everybody tailgating. And I remember stopping and looking around and being like, this is the world that I've been in my entire life. That's the world I want to be in. And I went home and I said, on the flight, I said, that's my career. Mm-hmm. And that's literally, you know, how it began.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So tell me about the,
I didn't get back to
Fred, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So Fred, so I got so into the story that I forgot. So Fred, you know, he makes this connection for me. I quit the job and I never get to tell Fred what happened. So I quit the job. I start this career. What happened there? 22 years. I'm a sports photographer. I'm a wedding photographer. I'm a corporate photographer. I made a full career from this. Not only that, but built a life of financial freedom and time freedom. So much because of what he said and did for me, but I never told him. He doesn't know. Mm-hmm. He's living his life. So 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I called his son. I said, "I need to thank your dad for what he did for me." And And he's like, I don't even think that was my dad. I said, no, I said, that was your dad. So he connected us. And then I told him what Fred had said. He goes, yeah, that sounds like my dad. Like about, about if you're still here, you're a loser. Mm. So he makes the connection. We get on the phone call and I tell him the whole story. Here's the funny thing. Fred went to the same high school I did, Roslyn High School. He graduated 30 years earlier than I did. 1959, I graduated 89. We did not know this. I thought he's a successful guy, always did well. No, in high school, he had the same treatment I did. His guidance counselor told him when he did so well on the SATs, it must have been a mistake. Whole thing was, I'm going to prove them all wrong. And he went on to build this incredible career in life. And so I said to him, I said, I needed to thank you for what you did because I would not have done this without you. And you didn't even know I did it. And he goes, Vince, he goes, everybody always talks about compensation. They need to get compensated for their work. They need to get paid for their work. They need to get with their value. And he goes, but I believe in a thing called psychic compensation. Meaning if you put good stuff out in the world, if you help people, if you connect people, if you do all the right things, you get psychic compensation. Meaning good things are happening to you and you don't even know it. You're going to get connections that you don't realize. You're going to get jobs that you don't realize. You're going to get referrals that you don't realize because you did good things without expectation, without wanting. And because of that, through your life, good stuff happens through psychic compensation. And that line, I hope, helps people as they go, I don't need, and I'm not telling you not to get paid. I want you to do well financially. But when you do good things, when you start out, when you're helpful, and the whole working for exposure thing, I'm sorry, I worked for exposure when I started. I did. Yeah. Every business we've ever done, I run a mastermind now for entrepreneurs. It started as free coaching. I give my book away for free to tons of people. I would do coaching calls for free. I'd do shoots for free. I would, whatever it took to get me moving and get my portfolio better, to get my connections better, to get my income up. Because once you charge something, then you could just charge a little more. Mm-hmm. And I think this goes against business advice because like you got to get paid what you're worth. I totally don't believe that so often because you don't even know what you're worth yet. And often you're not worth very much monetarily yet.
Right.
It took me, I made $20,000 my first 5.5 years of photography because I was in school, I was interning. But then all of a sudden, boom. It shoots up because of the connections, because of psychic compensation, and then, freedom comes from that. So I take a little different path on that than a lot of other business coaches do.
Hey, Raymond here, and we're going to get back to the show in just a moment. But let me ask you, are you ready to start charging for your photography, but you just simply don't know where to start? Do you want a repeatable model that is easy to set up and grow with you? Do you want to make your first $100 with your camera? Well, let me show you how with my complete step-by-step roadmap to earn your first $100 with your camera that you can download absolutely free over at firstphotoclient.com. And honestly, even if you've been shooting for a while, the roadmap that is in this free download is still the exact method that I use today to book weddings. And yet, so few people are using it. That is a huge advantage for you. But again, only if you download your free copy right now over at firstphotoclient.com. Now, let's get back to today's interview. Right. And I love that's such a great story. It is such a great story because it's a real world example of, somebody who was already successful and they decided to essentially give you, without knowing it, a piece of advice that really changed your life, but you still had to take action on that, right? People can give advice all day, but you still mm-hmm. had to take that and then turn that into action and turn that into something. But you said something earlier, which I thought was really interesting, and that it was Fred was a very curious guy. He came in, he's mm-hmm. a very curious person. And in your book, The Wealth of Connection, there are kind of five main C pillars. I don't know if there's an exact term for them, to being a person of connection. Can you, and Fred was obviously curious. Yeah. Can you talk to me about curiosity and of course the other four column pillars as well? There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear, like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
Yeah, can I explain where it came from too?
Because yeah, absolutely.
Well, the whole idea is I see so many people, you know, this is what I do for a living now. I haven't shot for about 5 years. I help people with this. And so many people either write a book or they start a podcast or they start a photography business, whatever it is, and they do their work and they think their work is what's going to set them apart. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what's going to sell them. And in a few rare instances, it does. But for the most part, it's like, I'm good at what I do. My book is good. My photography, it works. My clients love it. You know, my podcast is really good interviews. Why don't people care? Why are not enough people interested? And what I realized is everybody starts with creation. They think it's the product. They think it's the work. They think it's that sells it. And it's not. For the most part, it is not. And I started to deconstruct this. Why do certain people always have success? And why do so many people rarely have success? And that's where it came from. So the five C's, I'll go backwards with it and then I'll explain it. When you start with creation and you think your work, you think your photography is going to be the thing in a sea of sameness, you're in for frustration. So what happens is people go, okay, well, you need to collaborate. You need to know people like Raymond. You need to listen to his podcast. You need to get on his podcast, right? And then they reach out to Raymond and Raymond nicely might say, hey, I get 200 inquiries a week to be on my podcast. I don't know you. You might not say this. I'm not sure how you go about it, but I see this in my world, in every industry happening. Okay, Raymond's hard to collaborate with. Okay, you need to connect with Raymond. Well, here's what people do. They try to connect with Raymond or somebody like you, and they do it from a very selfish perspective. They don't even realize it. How can I get what I need from Raymond? How can I get Raymond to talk about my work? How can I get him to display my stuff? How can I get him to talk about me? And that's when I went backwards. I'm like, okay, there's connection. Well, then there's curiosity. Are you interested in other people, or are you trying to be interesting to other people? And that's the one thing that I wrote about.
Yeah.
And so there's the curiosity factor. And then the most important part, I think, starts at the beginning, which is character. Because you can have all these things, but we've all met people that are charismatic, right? But they're not truthful often. They can sell you on stuff. It doesn't have character. So when I backed it up, the most successful people have these two core foundational pieces, which are character and curiosity. They have generous goals over selfish goals. It's not just about what they want. Fred wasn't just about what he wanted. Fred was about connecting people and helping people and having that psychic compensation. The people with character last 20, 30, 40, 50 years. The people with charisma last about four or one or six until they get found out. They can have great content. They can have great connections. Collaboration. But when your character is wrong, when I find out that you're not honest, you're not truthful, you're not helpful, I and other people want to separate character and then curiosity, questions about other people, because your questions about others will lead to your better product. If you know more about your client, you know more about what kind of image that they want. You know more about how you can do it differently than everybody else. We were always curious in our photography about our clients and about, you know, how we're doing the work. When you can have those two things, connection is easy because now you're on the same page, whether with your clients or with influencers, or whatever, you now have elevated above this surface level BS networking that everybody talks about, and you're into real connection. The fun happens from there. When you can develop that connection, when you can give and take what they're looking to give you, you do collaboration, which is exactly what we're doing here. You and I have known each other for years, right?
Yes.
I don't have to go to you and say, hey, Raymond, can I sell you on having me on the podcast? We've connected and you read the book and now here we are. And you are now opening up your audience to me, which is so valuable to be able to say, hey, I have this message and you trust me enough to say, hey, audience, you should check this out. That's collaboration. Now you're going into different worlds and spreading different places you would never get on your own. Mm-hmm. And if you do this daily, weekly, think about the different worlds and people you open up to. And then the fun part is when you go to create, everything becomes easier. The next book I write, I have more people following me. I have more people trusting me. We open up a live event or a mastermind. Now people are like, hey, Raymond and these other people trusted me. This person has character, curiosity, connection, collaboration. I trust their stuff. It's so much easier to do business that way, but most people do it backwards.
You're right. Of course. Well, because we're so used to creating the thing, right? It's like the, who was it from? Was it from, maybe it was from the E-Myth, but it was like, you know, you got a plumber, right? They're really good at being a plumber, but they hate their boss. So they think I can go out and I can be a plumber. Mm-hmm. And then they go out and do that. They're creating the thing without doing the rest of the work. And then they find that their business fails. And I hear in photography all the time, and I'm sure that you have as well, like, my photo should speak for itself. It's like, it's not going to speak for itself. There's so much more that goes into a great photo than it just simply speaking for itself. And that idea of, you know, connecting with people and kind of building this process, I think when it comes to, especially, you know, for somebody like me as a wedding photographer, when you first get started, as you know, one of the most, beneficial things that you can do is connect with a wedding planner, right? And you have to show them your character. You have to be curious about who they are before you can start creating with them and building a relationship. And if you just started off and said, hey, why don't you send some weddings my way? You're not going to get any success whatsoever.
Which is, think about what most people do. How can I get on your list? You know how many people ask me, if I'm a wedding event planner, how many people daily are saying, I want to be on your list? Tons. Well, what is going to get somebody on the list? That's what they don't ask. What gets me on the list? When people like you, and also when you're easy to work with, when people like work, we get on all the vendors list because people say you're so easy to work with. We appreciate. I remember one time there's a place called Heinz Chapel here in when we lived in Pittsburgh, and they had so many. It was the place that everybody wanted to go, and they would. But it was kind of a mill. They would do like five weddings a day. It was beautiful, and I'll never forget one time we walked in, and the two coordinators went to the side of the table, and they saw us, me and Elizabeth. They said, "Oh, thank goodness, they're professionals." And because they're dealing with so many people that are just short term with what they're doing. We had worked with them. We had built connection. We had built relationship. And here's the key to it, especially in this industry. It's built on referrals. Mm-hmm. Wedding work or photography work mainly is built on referrals. SEO is great. Website is great. But it's the people that are talking about you, they're going to get you the easiest jobs that you're going to do, the ones you love and the ones that pay the best. Mm-hmm. If you're not building out a referral network and you're not somebody that people are talking about and people want to know, you're hurting your business without even knowing it by thinking, oh, if I just do another blog post or I do more social media, that's great. That all has its part. But the personal side of it, where you've built that connection to get the referral, it will take off any business.
Right. And that's what I was talking about earlier. You know, exactly that. It's like adding that personal element back into business is so important, especially in a world where, okay, here's another thing, I guess, just reminded me from your book. You have a part where you talk about time and pressure, right? From Shawshank, first of all.
Yes.
I'm with you there. Whenever it's on TV, I will plant my butt on the couch and I will just sit there for hours and watch.
You talk about losing focus. That's why I can't scroll, because if I see that, that's 2.5 hours gone because I have to watch it.
Exactly. Exactly. So can you talk to me about time and pressure specifically for photographers? And I guess rather than the idea of, you know, people wanting to, you know, win the lottery, maybe photographers going viral. I feel like that's kind of the goal. Does that make sense? Like a lot of photographers want to go viral. Never mind. I'm going to back off and I will let you explain.
Yeah. No, it makes sense, but it's not just, it's universal in business. What's the one thing that's going to shoot me to success, right?
Yeah.
But the time and pressure and time thing is, you know, if you watch Shawshank, you know, Andy Dufresne was chipping at the wall because he was bored and all of a sudden a piece of clay came out. He's like, and he was a geologist. He was like, wait a second, you know, it's pressure and time. Like that's what happens. It's like, over time, this wall is going to break down. And if you just chip away at it enough, it's going to go. So he just every day chipped away a little bit, threw the pieces out in the yard. Every day he would go out. No pressure, no like, I got to get out here today. He knew he couldn't break out today. It's kind of like business. You know, you're probably not going viral today and you're going to annoy people by trying to be.
Yes.
Right? Short-term thinking. But he kept chipping away at it. Then all of a sudden, he escapes from the prison because he was, the good side was he wasn't guilty, so he could escape from the prison without being immoral, right? And he escaped, and you know, and that, but that was the whole thing. And that's how you build a business: pressure and time. I talked about it in my first book when I got working for the Associated Press in New York. When I came back from that trip and I went all in, I interned for Newsday in New York, which was at that point the sixth largest newspaper in the country, which led to the Associated Press, which is where I really wanted to work in New York City. All the giant assignments, you know, I spent the day with the Dalai Lama walking around New York City, just me and him. And so, but how do I get in there? And so I mean, I had a connection. Somebody made a connection, but every time I would call him, Jonathan Elmer, he would set up a meeting and literally he canceled it the day before seven times in a row, 7 weeks in a row, had a Monday and a Friday meeting that got canceled. I called back Monday morning and they said, okay, well, he could see you Friday. No joke. Six or seven times he canceled. And I kept calling back every Monday morning. And then he kept saying yes. Finally, he said, I'll take you. Took the train in, took the F train in to, it was at Rockefeller Center in New York City. And I went to his office with my portfolio, the same one that I gave to Fred.
Wow.
And he opened it up with newer pictures, better pictures. And he opened it up. He was looking through it. I remember being on the third floor of Rockefeller Center when he said this. He goes, Vincent, he goes, I want to thank you for your patience and your persistence. He says, without either of those, we wouldn't be here right now. Mm. And I remember sitting back as he looked at my portfolio, and I remember thinking, don't forget that. Because where so many other people couldn't get in, or they got mad because they didn't get the gig, or they didn't stay long enough, or they didn't put the work in, I was patient. I kept coming back after the rejection. But I was persistent because I kept asking. And I think it's the same thing with your content. It's the same thing with your work. It's the same thing with pressure and time. It takes time and it takes consistency, but it takes patience. It's not going to happen. And in an era of instant gratification, if you can get past that while being consistent, you will outlast 90% because those other people will not last.
Right.
Whether it's 1 year, 3 years, or 5 years, they will eventually say what so many people said to me, there's no money in it. I went to go and sell insurance. That's what happened to the photographers when I was starting. And I said, no, I'm going to keep going. And then 3 years later, like, oh, you're lucky. Like, you can call it luck, whatever you want to call it. But I didn't stop. Right. And a lot of them stopped because they're so sold on the idea of I'm going to be successful sooner. Where if they had the patience and the persistence, it almost always works out.
Right, right. And I think my terrible question there in the beginning for you that I was trying to get at with the whole idea of going viral is just that. It is so hard for... You know, when you see somebody, you know, I guess, quote unquote, go viral, you think, wow, look at all that success. Like, they're so lucky. Like, look at them. This is amazing. But chances are you're probably not going to hear from them in another week or 2 weeks. And they're going to go back down to right wherever they were. Whereas if somebody is laying low, maybe under the radar, putting in those connections, doing that work, it's going to slowly start to build until they become somebody who... They are like, say, the wedding photographer in Pittsburgh. And, you know, they become that person because they didn't expect to just go viral. And then that's going to be the thing. But putting in that work.
But the thing about viral is this. It's really interesting to think about. First of all, if you talk to people that go viral, and I've talked to a lot of them, what went viral wasn't the first thing they did. Mm-hmm. They still worked a lot. Sure. It's like the musician that's the big hit. You know, I remember, and I wrote about this in the first book. I think it was Crowded House. They won Best New Artist for MTV. Mm. They went viral with a song. And they got interviewed, like, how does it feel to be Best New Artist? And the singer made a sarcastic comment. He goes, something to the effect of like, well, we could pretend like we're new. Best New Artist. They've been doing it for 10 years.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And then one thing went viral. The other thing is, if you go viral too soon and you aren't ready for it, you are the lottery winner. 70% of lottery winners go broke within 3 years. Why? Because they're not prepared for it. They're not prepared financially. Their family's not prepared. You have a bunch of freeloaders that now want your money. You don't know how to handle the money. You've got to be able to handle success before you get success. Mm-hmm. And if you get viral too soon, how do you, do you have a system in place to handle everything that's going to come in from there? Are you going to drop the ball on so many things that you will lose your reputation? Nobody thinks about that. Like, is the viral thing the thing that you really want? Are you really, if your thing went viral today, could you handle the volume that comes in? Because that they talked about it with Oprah, and it's called the hug of death. And I don't know if anybody's ever heard of this.
No.
But essentially, when people go on Oprah, though, at least they used to, and she would give them the hug of approval, like, hey, you know, buy this thing. If the how many businesses it crashed because they weren't prepared for the volume of what came in from it.
Right.
They weren't. So it was a hug of death. It was a great hug, but so many times it actually destroyed businesses because they couldn't handle it. And there was so much dissatisfaction with the fact that they couldn't handle it, that it tanked the business. People weren't ready for it. So yeah,
that's amazing.
So we've never searched for the viral thing, because there's a downside if you're not prepared.
Yeah. It's using that, you know, whatever happens as leverage to be able to you know, get further, but you just can't count on it. And if it does happen, that hug of death sounds absolutely terrible. I want to talk about now about the story that you share in your book about, going to get your portfolio critiqued.
Yeah.
And, it was not a good moment for you, was it?
Depends on how you look at it.
At first, I guess, going at up first. There, yeah, and yeah. And being told what you were, it was not. I'm sure it did not feel good in that moment.
No, well, the story is, I went to journalism school after those stories I told you. I went to Ohio University, which was a great school for journalism and photography. And you know, now I'm kind of on a path of not just a sports photographer, but a journalist. I want to work for a newspaper. I want to work for magazines. And so we go to a conference as students. And the photo editor from the Washington Post is there. So I'm speaking in almost past terms at the Washington Post at that moment, before everything went crazy, you know, media wise, it's so divided now, it's so political, but it wasn't then. Washington Post was like the top. That was the place to go. And so I went so the main editor is giving critiques. This is your moment to find out if you're awful, if you're good, what you have. And most of my classmates were afraid of him. They didn't want to go because they were afraid of being torn apart. I'm like, I have to do this. I have to find out where I'm at. This is literally a real life barometer of where I'm at. And the guy in front of me goes up and the editor tore him apart, just destroyed him. He's like, you shoot everything with a 300 millimeter lens. Do you ever get close to people? Like literally like all the things that, you know, accurate, but the kid was not ready. I mean, it was tough and it was brutal. And it was real.
Sure.
And I had a moment to be like, do I want to back away or I want to take it? I'm like, I'm going to go take it. I got to find out. I got to learn. So I came up with my portfolio. It was a slide portfolio. It was 20 slides in there. I've worked on this for 3 years now, mm-hmm. right? And it's the best of the best of my work. And he went through it with a loop. He looked at everything. He pulled two slides out, pushes them to me. And in the moment I'm thinking, okay, good. You know, 18 out of 20. I did pretty good. And he looks at me and he says, those are your two. He goes, get rid of the rest. Keep those two. That's your portfolio. And I'm thinking, how do I have a portfolio of two pictures? Like, how in the world am I going to do that? And I just gave him this dumbfounded look. And he goes, those two pictures are timeless. They will last the test of time. He goes, everything you do, you know, that's the level you need to be at. The rest of the stuff can be replicated. It's not there yet. And I'm thinking, blood, sweat, and tears for these images. Like I literally bled for some of these images. I fought for it, drove, beat traffic, dirt.
Yeah,
everything. And he's just rejecting it all. And I have a choice right now to be offended, to blow him off, to not believe it. And I literally took it. I took the two pictures, put them into a different slide, went back, sat on the couch and thought about it. And I said, I've got two pictures in my portfolio, but there are two pictures that will last with all editors, because if they can handle it with him, most will take it. And now I have a barometer of success, which to go by, mm-hmm. which means my images now have to meet that standard. My photography improved that day, because I had a higher level to shoot for. I wasn't shooting for the C or D level. I was shooting for the A level. So now you become more discerning. You start seeing backgrounds differently. You start seeing layering differently. You start seeing lighting different. Everything changed from there. And I'm telling you, Raymond, my career trajectory in terms of quality and just reputation and referral increased from that day.
So
from either taking the rejection as opposed to rejecting the rejection.
Of course. So that was the lighting, the composition, the backgrounds. Would you say that those were the three main elements that you were missing from the other 18 photos? Or was there something else?
I think there were little aspects of each of those and everything. Like one might have had a great moment, mm-hmm. but the background was, you know, had a white car in the background, right? We don't see our own stuff. A lot of times I would critique other people's portfolios and I'd say no. And they'd be like, you don't understand. Like I was laying in the dirt for this one. And you know, the emotion that was going on, like
nobody cares.
I remember saying, Dan, like if I can't see it, You can't, don't explain it to me. Mm-hmm. If you have to explain what's in the image, it doesn't convey. The image has to stand out without you saying anything. And I didn't realize that then. So it's like, okay, yeah, I might have the person leaping over the other person, right? The levitating football player or that emotional, you know, journalistic moment. But if the background has power lines coming through their head, you really lowered the value of it, mm-hmm. right? If the lighting is just this awful straight light, there's no, just realizing it, how do I keep, it's patience and persistence. How do I keep improving on this so that when it all comes together, I know how to turn just a little bit to make it right or to get down or to wait a little bit longer. It just, the quality of my photography improved so much by studying that type of thinking.
Yeah, that makes sense. One of the other things that you talk about in the book is this, having this mindset of always being a beginner. And, you know, I hear that from a lot of people. But as somebody who has shot some of the biggest sports events in the world, you've been published in some of the biggest magazines, you've won, you know, press photography's top awards. What does that mean for you to always be a beginner when you have achieved a level of success that many can only dream of?
I think there's a lot of different ways you can go with it. I really think it comes down to curiosity. I really do. You ever know something and you know it, you're not really going to be persuaded on anything. Mm-hmm. If I know it, what am I really going to look into this anymore for? I'm not going to be open for a conversation. I'm going to probably try to tell you how you're wrong and not be, but to me, always being a beginner realizes that I'm always learning. I'm always a beginner at something. And I think so often, here's the problem. When you get to that level, you explain, like say the expert level, there's a big problem with the expert level. If you stay there, because if you're the expert level, you're not really growing. You're kind of maintaining or holding on. This is what you see with businesses. The beginning stages are so exciting. And then they kind of start growing. And then they get to this expert level where they just don't want to lose what they have. They're not curious anymore. They're not innovative anymore. They're now just, it's kind of like the rich person that's like, oh my God, somebody's going to take my money away from me. Having a $3 million house isn't comforting to them. They're actually thinking, what if I lose this? Because I used to be poor and I know what that's like. Mm-hmm. It's a fear-based thing. So the expert, and you're also not very curious. You're not very inventive when you're the expert. So I say, I always want to be three things. I always want to be an expert at something because financially I'm fine. If I'm an expert at something, I can charge top dollar. I could work less. Money's fine. If I'm an expert at something, if I'm growing something and I'm a beginner in something, if I always have my hand in one of those things, there's never a problem. I don't need the beginner thing to make me money right now. So I can go do the whole psychic compensation. Growing is kind of exciting. Expert is keeping me really safe and maybe a teacher. So if I could, but the problem is there's been times where I was just the expert and that was the boringest, loneliest time for me. Because when you're not doing well, you could always say, well, when I get there, things will be better.
Yes.
But the worst is when you get there and you're where you think you should be and you're empty. And you go, wait a second, I have the money, I have the success, I have the accolades. Why do I feel so empty? It's because you're just the expert. You're not using your expertise to teach other people. You're not curious enough to challenge yourself to do something that you can fail at. You're just trying to hold on. Mm-hmm. And that's why people don't understand why experts struggle, because they stay there. So that's the moment where you go, I got to be a beginner in something. I got to go write a book that I'm probably going to fail at. I got to go do a podcast that's probably going to fail. I got to try something that keeps me as a beginner. So I always want to be a beginner in some, whether it's writing this book, which is the scariest thing in the world. You're putting a book out and you go, what if everybody rejects it? What if nobody what if nobody leaves a review or talks about, you're putting yourself out there. I don't need to do that. I'm good. The book is part of being a beginner. But then that goes to the growing phase now where I'm like, oh, cool. The feedback's been good. Let's talk about it. And then eventually you might be expert on the stage talking about that thing. Well, what's the thing you're a beginner at? I always shift to that mode.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is, I think that's such a hard concept for somebody to take in and realize when they are currently in that beginner mode, right? Like in an actual beginner's mode, as many of the listeners of the podcast are. But I'm sure that, you know, anybody can figure out how that's going to work in some other area of their life. And they can see that's exactly how it works.
It's easier than you realize with photography, I think, because if you're a beginner at the photography side, right? That's your podcast, right? You're the beginner at this. Chances are you got a job somewhere where you're making money, right? You might be the expert there. How do you optimize that? Meaning, how do you do that to maybe it cost you less time, or you can make more money where that expert phase frees you up to build the beginner phase. Mm. This is the number one thing I see people doing wrong, is they don't use their job to build their business the right way. Right. So for I'll give you our story. When, you know, and I might have mentioned the story on the last time we talked, was, you know, my wife and I, Elizabeth, were working in a newspaper. I was making $32,000 a year, but I was international sports photographer of the year. Right. How does that work? You're making no money, but you win the biggest award. Well, the turning point came, and I'll be real quick with it, where, you know, I got a 3% raise, and I'm like, what do I do? So I'm an expert, even though I'm not getting paid very much. And I went home to call my dad to see if I can get some work with him so I can make a little money. And he told me no. And now my dad's turning me down. And it was the worst day of my life, it seemed like. But he said something that changed my life. He said, you have a skill, but you're not using it correctly. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, you're settling for these numbers. You're setting for $32,000 a year in benefits when you can go shoot weddings, corporate, commercial, sports, do anything you want. You can have no income limit. You can control your time, right? Went and started a business. The next day, I called my 8-month pregnant wife on the phone. I said, we're starting a business. That's not the best thing you want to say to your 8-month pregnant wife. But we did. But what we did was this. We had a plan. And this is what I think most people missed out on in this phase. They kind of stay ambiguous. They stay confused. We said, we're going to stay in the job, but we have a plan. We're going to build this business. And it was financial. We're going to take the income from the business and pay down our debt. We had consumer debt. We had a mortgage. So the whole thing was, I'm going to stay in the job. I'm going to use it for what it needs to do. I'll do my best I can, but I'm not going crazy. And we're going to build this business. And every bit of income we make, we reduce our debt. It did two things. Our debt got knocked all the way down to where we eventually paid off our house, became 100% debt free, while our income from the business kept rising because we had a passion to build it. When I went to quit the job 2.5 years later, we job shared at that point. The day I quit, Raymond, we had no debt. We had a 6-figure business and I had complete freedom. Mm. My next assignment wasn't for another 2 weeks. And I was like, hello, time. I get to spend time with my kids. I get to do whatever work I want. And it went from instant, like just crazy work and insane, to freedom, because we built that thing for 2.5 years to when we left, there was no stress of leaving. It was actually a detriment to stay in the job at this point.
Sure.
But I think most people don't set out a plan to do that.
Well, because that's, you know, 2.5 years is a pretty short amount of time. But when you have a goal that like you're really excited about, seems a million miles away. But that just goes back to the time and pressure. If you just keep putting in the work every single day, you're going to get there. You're going to get
there. Think about 2.5 years ago. It seems like yesterday that COVID started.
Oh, man.
Right. In some ways, that's all done, hopefully. Right. But that wasn't that long ago. Mm-mm. But that's the time it takes to do it.
Yeah.
But most, you know, it's thinking about, you know, I wrote in one of the books, is like, will you give up a year of your life for a lifetime of freedom? Because it really, the year was the hardest. 2007 was the hardest of all the three, of all the years. Would you give up a year of your life focused for the rest of your life to have freedom? And now all the things I'm doing now are because of the decisions we made then.
Yeah. Vinny, I don't know how to end it any better than that. It is very uplifting. It is very exciting. I leave every time we chat with a renewed sense of excitement. You know, I really don't know how to put it any better way than that. But before I let you go, I know that there's listeners who are also going to be as excited as I am right now. So can you share where they can find out more about you and, of course, your book as well?
Yeah, the book's on Amazon, easy to find, The Wealth of Connection. About me, everything's at the website, totallifefreedom.com. We have information about the books. We have information about, we run an online community for entrepreneurs to do exactly what we just talked about, build that business for time, money, location, freedom. I have a podcast that I did daily for 3 years that's paused right now, but there's 1,100 episodes there. We have a couple of free downloads there. I actually give away the audio copy of my first book, Freelance to Freedom, on there, if anybody wants it. And check us out there, LinkedIn, find me there, connect with me, and would love to learn more about what your people are doing.
I always love chatting with Vinny. I think my biggest takeaway from this episode was really Vinny's take on the beginner's mindset, right? If you go into every single day thinking, I wonder what I'm going to learn today, I think that's going to put you in such a better place, a better mindset for growing as a photographer than, oh, I have a full frame camera. I know what I'm doing. I shoot in RAW. You know, there's nothing that I can learn here. And that closed off attitude is never going to get you anywhere. It's never going to help you advance in your, you know, your pursuits of being a photographer. But really wondering from every interaction that you have, you know, I wonder what I'm going to learn. Is really going to set you up for success. Now, if you have any questions about today's episode or you have feedback on the show, feel free to reach out to me directly at beginnerphotographypodcast.com. There is a contact button at the top of the page. And you know what? While you're there, be sure to download my free Picture Perfect camera settings cheat sheet with camera settings for more than 10 popular types of photography filled with my personal and professional images and real life camera settings so that you know where to get started. And as I mentioned in the intro, I may have bought a few extra copies of Vinny's book. So when you download my free Picture Perfect settings guide at beginnerphotographypodcast.com, you will be automatically entered to win a copy of Vinny's book, The Wealth of Connection. I'm going to go ahead and draw names next week and reach out to you to get your address and send you your copy if you win. So again, be sure to grab your free Picture Perfect camera setting guide at beginnerphotographypodcast.com. And you'll be automatically entered to win. And if you've already downloaded the guide, well, congratulations. You are still automatically entered to win. So good luck. Now, that is it for this week. Thank you again for tuning into this episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast brought to you by CloudSpot, the easiest way to deliver and sell your photos online. You can learn more about CloudSpot by heading over to deliverphotos.com today. And remember, the more that you shoot today, the better you will be tomorrow. Talk soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.